Michigan dismantles Penn State in the Big House on Saturday. Reaction regarding the game. The Wolverines move up to number 4 in the college football rankings. Plenty of thoughts on that. We'll preview the game against Rutgers on Saturday with James Cratch from NJ.com, get you some picks, and a whole lot more. It's all coming up next on this week's edition of Hail to the Pod. Welcome to Hail to the Pod. I'm your host, Kevin Rich. Remember, you can always email the show at hailtothepod@gmail.com. Tweet me at krich23. And be sure to subscribe to the podcast everywhere your favorite podcasts are found, including iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. If you like the podcast, rate it, leave a review. Appreciate that immensely. We'll preview the game this weekend against Rutgers with James Cratch from NJ.com shortly, but first, you got to talk about Michigan's dominant performance, a huge win against Penn State in the Big House on Saturday, a throttling, as the kids would say. Michigan 42, Penn State 7. Oh, baby, that was a fun one. I got to tell you, the atmosphere in the Big House was electric on Saturday. And sure, it was pretty electric for the Wisconsin game a few weeks back, but this one felt even bigger. The team responded with a huge W on the Revenge Tour column there, and I gotta tell you, they're just playing out of their mind right now. The Michigan defense has been unreal. I wrote down some stats after the game I have to share with you, because these just, they boggle my mind. Since halftime of the opener against Notre Dame, the defense has been on the field for 102 drives. Of those 102 drives, only 16 of them have ended in points. Think about that for a second. 16 out of 102 drives, 16% of the time, a point has been scored by the opposition. 12 touchdowns and 4 field goals. That's how those 16 possessions of the 102 have happened. Just unbelievable stuff. Now, taking that into further consideration, think about this. The last three games, which we talked about would be the toughest stretch for Michigan, games against Wisconsin, Michigan State, and Penn State, Michigan has only given up 4 touchdowns in those three games. And against those three teams, they've only given up a total of 27 points, so basically 9 points on average per game. What makes that stat even more startling, Penn State has averaged 37 points per game, Wisconsin 31, and Michigan State 24. Yet Michigan was able to hold those three teams collectively to 27 points, 9 points per game. And then I was watching the game on replay yesterday, and they flashed a stat during the broadcast regarding Michigan's cornerbacks that my jaw just dropped. So Michigan's cornerbacks, David Long, Lavert Hill, and Brandon Watson, have been targeted 77 times. They've only given up 27 receptions and 2 touchdowns. That was a stat provided before the Penn State game. 77 targets, 27 receptions, 2 touchdowns. So that means prior to the Penn State game, opposing wide receivers have only caught a ball 35% of the time when thrown against Michigan's cornerbacks and have only scored 7% of the time. I mean, these stats are incredible, and I have one more for you. In Michigan's 6 conference games, they've only given up 1 play of 40-plus yards. That was the play with 2 minutes left in the Maryland game when the game was already over. Michigan was up 28 in that game, and of course, that happened in garbage time. I mean, this defense is on a whole new level right now, and it is getting not just the attention of the Big Ten, it is getting the attention nationally and by the College Football Committee. So when after the game, when Coach Harbaugh references Dom Brown as like the king of beers in Budweiser, the dude is the king. Get him whatever he wants. I mean, there's no doubt he is one of the best coordinators in the country. And then you talk about offense. Michigan offensively is clicking. These guys are playing really well. You look at the game on Saturday, 7 straight runs to start the game. The offensive line just pushing off defenders, setting up blocks. Higdon motoring down the field. He now leads all running backs in the country with most consecutive games this season with 100 plus yards. And then you talk about the run pass option. Shea Patterson is running that to a T. The opportunity for him to tuck it and go, That's gotten better and better each game. I mean, how many times now have we been watching in the last couple games where he goes to hand the ball off and you think he did, and before you know it, he's running up the field for 7 yards, 10 yards, or even more than that, like the 60-yarder he busted off against Wisconsin. And then the passing game is clicking too. And I know you look at the stats and the yardage, the yards don't really rack up because most of them have come in the running game, not so much the passing game. But the plays that they are making through the air have been effective and they've been efficient. DPJ continued to wow. He had a great game on Saturday. Gentry got that easy touchdown pass on a great play action call by the Michigan offense. Nico Collins, he comes down with that great deep ball catch in the first half. And I know it didn't count because of the holding call on Gentry, but how sick was that catch by Tariq Black? A healthy Tariq Black on this football team means much bigger things for this football team moving forward. On a side note, and I got to throw this out because my head scratches, and I work with a couple Penn State fans in my office, and they're done with James Franklin. I don't think they should be done with him, but some of these decisions that he makes in these games are mind-boggling. So you remember the Ohio State game where he decides on fourth down and a couple yards when the game is in balance, I need to get a first down in order to keep the drive alive and have a chance to come back and win that game. And he elects to have McSorley keep the ball and run it up the middle. Just a terrible play call. Think about some of the play calls he made in this Michigan game in your head. You're scratching your head. You just don't understand it. And I'm not saying these decisions would have swung the game in Penn State's favor. They were overmatched. Michigan was hungry. Michigan played a complete game. But some of these, if you're a Penn State fan, you got to be wondering, why is he doing this? Like, where are these calls coming from? Penn State's first possession, a punt on 4th and 24, he calls timeout. Then near the end of the second quarter, with clock ticking down, they probably could have gotten the clock down to about 30 seconds or so, Franklin calls a timeout prior to the punt. A punt! That gave Michigan time, if they wanted to go down the field and try and score before the end of the first half. And Michigan did call for a pass play on that first down. They just weren't able to convert, and they decided to run out the clock and take it to halftime with a 14-point lead. But why would you even put your team in that situation? And then the biggest one of all to me was the kickoff where Michigan kicks the ball out of bounds. Penn State's about to get the ball at the 35-yard line. And Franklin decides to allow Michigan to re-kick, not take the ball at the 35, but re-kick. And of course, Michigan is able to tackle KJ Hamler at the Penn State 23. So some of these just, oh, I even forgot one. How about the waffling back and forth between McSorley and Stevens? Stevens, on his second play, throws a ridiculous pass, gets picked off by Watson. Watson takes it to the house. And then on the next drive, he decides to put McSorley back in before he waffles and then puts Stevens in after that. So just some head-scratching decisions there by James Franklin in this game. And if you know a Penn State fan, if you have one in your office, or you know, maybe you see one walking down the street, just give him a hug. Because that's just... Look, we've seen that. We've had coaching decisions and coaching moves and things like that over the years that just make your head scratch. But it seems like James Franklin is doing those consistently on a week in and week out basis. And I feel for you if you're a Penn State fan and having to deal with that. All right, so I went on a tangent there, so I'll get back to Michigan. But we talked about the offense. We talked about the defense. Special teams was fine in the game as well. Michigan just had a great performance on every level in that game. And it was awesome to see Tariq Black, Rashawn Gary, Juwan Bushel-Beatty, all those guys get back on the field after injuries in previous games. The lone upsetting moment of the game was the fact that Dylan McCaffrey got hurt late in the game, garbage time. He breaks his collarbone. You hope he's okay. He's probably going to be out the rest of the year, which really, that's a tough one to lose because McCaffrey has been really good as a backup and has gotten an opportunity to show what he's able to do and what he's capable of. And, you know, you can't really get those kind of reps in practice. It's those reps that come in-game that make you a better player. And it's a shame to see him go down because he really was improving. On the optimistic side of it, of course, Michigan's got talent. They've got the freshman Joe Milton. Of course, they've got Brandon Peters, who saw quite a bit of time last year before getting hurt. It'll be interesting to see which one of those guys will be the backup to Patterson moving forward. Time for some quick college football ranking reaction before we preview the game against Rutgers on Saturday. Of course, week two of the college football rankings came out on Tuesday night, which, by the way, how agonizing was that? to not only have to wait till 9 o'clock to get the rankings, but to turn on the TV at 9 o'clock to see that there was still 10 minutes left in the Michigan State-Kansas game. And of course, of all college games that would be on, it was of course Michigan State playing, which you thought when Sparty cut the game to 3 points with a few seconds left, please don't go to overtime. Fortunately, it didn't. But the rankings are out and pretty much what we expected, at least in the top six, right? I mean, the three undefeated teams up top, Bama at one, Clemson at two, Notre Dame at three, and of course, Michigan moving up and sitting pretty at number four. No surprises behind them with Georgia at five and Oklahoma at six. I am surprised at number seven, though, and that's LSU. LSU only falling to seven. They're in front of one-loss teams like Washington State, West Virginia, and Ohio State. I really expected West Virginia to be at seven, especially after Dana Holgorsen elected to go for two and the win against Texas and pulled that off successfully on Saturday. I mean, that dude has to wear some big pants to call a play like that, if you're catching my drift. But Washington State, they did nothing really wrong either. They went out and they win. So I guess I expected West Virginia at seven. I expected a one-loss Washington State at eight. And then I could go either way if LSU with two losses was at nine and Ohio State with one loss and a really terrible win against Nebraska. They looked terrible on Saturday, coming in at 10. So I was very surprised with LSU coming in at seven. I mean, look, I can understand why the committee values LSU. They got wins over 24th-ranked Auburn, 16th-ranked Mississippi State, and 5th-ranked Georgia. But they also have two losses. And simply put, LSU does not pass the eye test. I mean, think about the eye test for a second. We've seen these teams play, right? The undefeated teams, do they pass the eye test? Absolutely. Does Michigan pass the eye test? Of course they do. Georgia, for sure. Oklahoma, yeah, the defense is still a liability, but the offense is unreal. And they've got everything left to play for, including a Big 12 championship. And right behind them, West Virginia, same as Oklahoma, can still play and win the Big 12 championship. Their defense is a bit of a liability, but the offense is really good. LSU just doesn't look the part. Yeah, they've got a good defense. Yeah, they're a good team. They're not elite, as James Franklin would say. Bama exposed them on Saturday. And even as good as that defense for LSU has been, they let Alabama score a lot of points. And of course, offensively, they did nothing. I guess my argument here is they have two losses. They really have no shot of getting back into the top four. So if you're the committee, why do you even rank them ahead of teams that still have playoff hopes? All six teams ahead of them have playoff hopes, no issues there. But so do the three behind them. West Virginia in particular, who still has a serious shot to get into the playoff. So I know this will all work itself out. I really do. It always does. But I'm still very surprised that the committee would rank LSU that high at number seven. Now, interestingly, when we go back to the Big Ten and shift focus here, Ohio State at 10, and Kirk Herbstreit mentioned this during the broadcast on Tuesday where they unveiled the rankings, and I agree with him 100% here. I'm not convinced, like him, that Ohio State doesn't need some help here. Assuming Ohio State were to win out, which would just be a gut-wrenching blow, considering how well Michigan's been playing, that would mean Ohio State obviously would beat Michigan. But if Ohio State were to win out the rest of the way and they're a 12-1 Big Ten champion, I'm just not convinced that they would pass over some of the teams that are in front of them right now. They would need a little bit of chaos. They would need a little bit of help because that Purdue loss was terrible and the way they've been playing lately is not good. So if you're Ohio State, you got to press the urgency button right now and you got to really rattle off some wins here that will get the committee thinking about you being a team that would make sense to put in the playoff. I think realistically at this point, the best chance for the Big Ten to get in the playoff is sitting with Michigan. And all Michigan needs to do is win out and they would be in. In terms of the rest of the rankings, no other huge surprises there. I guess maybe UCF staying at 12 and not moving past 11th-ranked Kentucky could maybe be something. But it wasn't really like UCF had that great of a game on Saturday themselves, so I don't know necessarily that you need to penalize Kentucky after losing to a really good Georgia team there. It was pretty cool to see Syracuse ranked 13th. They continue to play really well. They are the best shot, I think, of beating Notre Dame and knocking them off the list of undefeateds, which of course would propel Michigan into a third place ranking and give them a possible matchup against Clemson instead of the daunting task of going up against Alabama. Other than that, there are probably some teams here between 14th and 25th that maybe you scratch your head about, but really nothing that you can necessarily argue there. And at this point, it's really all about those teams in the top 10 and those teams that have either zero losses or one losses and what they can do the rest of the way. Now, in terms of the playoffs and how it impacts the games this week, I'm not sure you're going to see too much movement there up top. I mean, the top four teams, they're all favored by at least two touchdowns. I guess of the top four, maybe Clemson would have the best chance, and even that's a bad terminology because they're probably a 90 to 95% chance of winning that game on Saturday. But they're on the road at Boston College. Of the teams that are playing in the top four on Saturday, that game maybe could be a bit more in doubt than, say, Notre Dame playing a really bad Florida State team, Alabama at home against Mississippi State, and of course Michigan on the road as a 40-point favorite at Rutgers. I don't think any of the upsets that we see each week are going to come from the top four, but there are definitely some games to keep an eye on. Oklahoma State at Oklahoma, traditional rivalry game. Oklahoma already kind of looking ahead to that matchup against West Virginia. I think they need to be a little careful in that game. Washington State on the road at Colorado, that could maybe spring an upset there. And very interested to see how Ohio State plays at Sparty on Saturday. That could be an interesting one as well. But you know how it goes. It's always the upsets that you aren't expecting that happen, and they could certainly happen on Saturday, and that is why we love college football.
Here we go.
Fourth-ranked Michigan heading to Piscataway, New Jersey on Saturday. They'll take on 1-8 Rutgers. Here to help break down the game from a Rutgers perspective is James Cratch. James covers Rutgers football for New Jersey Advanced Media. You can check out his work at nj.com. Follow him on Twitter at James Cratch. James, thanks for popping on.
Anytime, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So, look, I know it's 8-1 versus 1-8. I know the spread is insane. I know it's been a rough go for Rutgers so far this year, but I will say, you know, watching a lot of Big Ten football, having watched some of the game against Wisconsin last week versus some of the games they played earlier this season, it seems like Rutgers is improving. Would that be an accurate statement?
I think so. I think they're definitely improving, particularly the last two games, you know, since Chris Ash, the head coach, has kind of taken added responsibility. And I know it's kind of like a vague term, that's what he's used, but he's kind of taking control of the defense. Defense has played much better in the last two games against Northwestern and after Wisconsin last week and after a bye week. I think when we all look back on the season, I assume it's going to finish at 1-11 with 11 straight losses end the year. I think the question, the interesting would be, how would this team have fared if the final 3 weeks were, say, that stretch where they played Indiana, Illinois, and Maryland,
right,
back to back to back, rather than Michigan, Penn State, Michigan State.
Oh.
I just think that that's part of their issue. And they knew that. I mean, they knew coming into the year that if they were going to do anything in terms of a bowl game or win four games, five games, they were going to have to do it before Halloween, because they always knew that this November was lurking with Wisconsin, Michigan, Penn State, and Michigan State.
Yeah, it's certainly a tough stretch of games there. Certainly when you play teams, can be a big factor in that as well. Now, that being said, you know, if this team were to finish the year with that record, is Chris Ash on the hot seat, or is it a little too early given, you know, he hasn't been with the program too long?
No, I mean, I think it's one of the things that people are kind of struggling with, the fan base, is that I would be stunned if Chris Ash is not the head coach next season. I would put it at 98% at this point, just because money is an issue in the sense that, you know, look, he's got 4 years left on his contract after the season, and Rutgers, as they kind of wait to get that full share of Big Ten money, they just don't have $10 million to just throw around to get rid of a coach at this point in their kind of financial situation. But the bigger, it's not really about money in the sense that AD Pat Hopps, who hired Chris Ash, fully supports him 100%. So I think Ash is definitely back next year now. in terms of hot seat, I think it's kind of it's a very nuanced situation. I do think that Rutgers is going to go into a situation next season where there's going to be definite pressure to kind of do make some progress. I think that's going to be a concern for the program in the sense that you're 1-11, recruiting, you know, young team, recruiting's not tearing anything up, you know, what type of class are you going to put together after 1-11? You know, the schedule's tough next year as well. You know, the division's not changing. The same teams are there. So, but no, he's not on the hot seat at all. I'd say he's got a tremendous job security right now, despite the record.
The freshman quarterback at Rutgers, Sikowski, looked pretty. I thought he looked decent last week against Wisconsin. I thought he, you know, misconnected on a couple plays that maybe could have changed some of the scope of the game. Certainly, Michigan's defense is one of the best in the nation. What do you think he's going to need to do to find some sort of success against a Michigan defense that likes to blitz and certainly cover wide receivers pretty effectively?
Well, I think it's going to be a very tough game for him because, you know, Rutgers wide receivers struggled mightily this year, and the pass protection has not been great. I think this is going to be an interesting test for him because, you know, the second game of his career, he faced Ohio State. And I think they got out there, and, like, one series in, it was almost like, wow, like, this defense is just operating at a totally different level. And he almost, you know, he had a really – you know, bad injury scare. He got crushed by Nick Bosa at the end of that first half. They haven't really faced a defense anywhere on that level, and Michigan's defense is vastly superior to Ohio State's. But now they're going to face another elite team, I would call it. And I just think it's going to be interesting to see what type of progression he makes. He hasn't turned the ball over the last 2 weeks. Still leads the nation with 15 interceptions. He's made a lot more, you know, he's been a lot more comfortable in the pocket, making better decisions. I just think the big test for him is going to be they're not going to score a lot of points on Saturday. I don't think they're going to score any points, probably. But does he throw five interceptions and have two of them returned for touchdowns, or does he keep the turnovers down? I mean, if he somehow gets through this game without throwing an interception, I would be stunned. But the thing is, okay, does he throw one? And is it, you know, a play where, you know, a guy just makes a really good play on the ball? Does he make the right decision? Because I think sometimes during the season when a team has fallen behind, he's tried to do too much, and it's kind of led to, you know, the mistakes stack up on each other. I think he kind of has gotten away from that in the last few weeks, but I think this is going to be a big test because this defense is unlike anything we've seen really since the Ohio State game, and that did not go well.
Yeah, and obviously covering Michigan, I've seen plenty of Michigan defenses, but, you know, being at the game last weekend against Penn State, I was sitting in the end zone and was watching, you know, Penn State had the ball pretty deep, like within their 10-yard line, and I'm just watching, like, the movement. And, you know, even from being up top and being able to get a better read of the field, it's like you have no idea where Michigan's defense is coming from. Are they going to come from the left, the right, the middle? Are they going to drop the Viper back, or is he going to blitz the quarterback? That's a situation that's really tough for the offenses to pick up. Now, running the ball, I mean, is that a situation that Chris Ash can feel maybe a little bit more confident that he might be able to run the ball there, or you think this is going to be a situation where they're not going to be able to move the ball much at all?
I mean, they have three pretty good running backs, you know, Jonathan Hillman, Isaiah Pacheco, Raheem Blackshear, who had the big game receiving against Wisconsin. But I think they'll try to run the ball. They always try to establish the run. I think their big issue has been they haven't had much success running the ball at most times this year, and that's kind of forced them to throw more, and that's kind of put more pressure on Sikowski. I do think they'll try to establish a run, but, I mean, I look at this matchup, it's just going to be very hard for Rutgers to do anything on offense.
It looks like the biggest advantage Michigan has in this game on the other side of the ball is running the ball. Rutgers gave up over 300 yards on the ground last week to Wisconsin. I think they're averaging giving up around 230 per game. It seems like a kind of game Michigan would just, you know, be able to run the ball all day, maybe set up some play action, but they shouldn't have to pass the ball too much. Does Rutgers have any tricks up their sleeve to maybe stop Michigan from doing that, or are you kind of thinking the game's going to play out the same way with Michigan just able to dominate on the line and run the ball?
I would think that's how it's going to play out. The one thing I'll say is last week, Jonathan Taylor had, I think, 97 yards at halftime, but, you know, Wisconsin only had 10 points, so it almost felt like Rutgers is that sort of rush defense where they can say, okay, well, he's gotten his 100 yards, but they haven't scored a lot of points. It just felt like it was almost like they contained Jonathan Taylor. Obviously, in the second half, he busted off some big runs, and they kind of got overpowered from there. Rutgers early in the year struggled mightily with big plays, especially in the run game. They were getting gashed every time you turned around for 40-yard run, 50-yard run, 60-yard run. Since Ash has taken over the defense, they've really cut down on those big plays. I know Wisconsin had a couple of them last week, but that was more a case of, you know, they just kind of wore Rutgers down and at the end of the game. You know, when the season started, they were giving up 50-yard run on, you know, second play of the game at the time. So I think that that's something that comes into play, but Rutgers, I think, is better equipped to kind of prevent those big plays. But I do think that Michigan, this is going to be a game where they're going to be able to pretty much bust off a 10, 15, 20-yard run whenever they feel like it.
Yeah, I'm thinking that's how the game's going to set up as well. James Kratz joins us here on Hail to the Pod, covers Rutgers football for NJ Advanced Media. You can check out his work at NJ.com. Follow him on Twitter, at James Kratz. Is there any element of this game on Saturday? I mean, I've looked at this up and down, and I just don't really see any area that maybe Rutgers would have an advantage. I know Coach Harbaugh kind of, you know, joked in his press conference this week, or maybe he was serious. You can never really read Coach Harbaugh, but he said Rutgers has tremendous kick coverage. You know, it's something that he wants to coach the team up and you know, defend well against that and hopefully bust some returns. But is there really any element to this game on Saturday that Rutgers may have an advantage on?
I mean, the kick coverage is good. I don't think that was just Jim Harbaugh trying to be funny. They have been very good covering kicks this year. The punter, Adam Korsak, has been very good. He's an Australian punter, and when he got here, his rugby-style kicking was kind of this curiosity. I mean, I think there's a very good argument to be made that he is the most effective player on the team at what he does. I don't know. I wouldn't go as far as calling the team MVP. I don't feel like you can really give a punter that when the team's 1-8, but he has been, I think you can make, for what he does, what his job is on a day-to-day basis, the best player Rutgers has. They've got two good defensive ends, young Ellen Loomer and Mike Turdall, who have been able to generate a pass rush here and there. I mean, I don't know how much success they're going to have against Michigan, but they are kind of building block guys. They have some decent college running backs in the backfield. You know, Sikowski's a guy who I think they have a lot of hope for down the road, but he's really not a difference maker right now. So they have some nice pieces here and there, but the big issue Rutgers has is they just don't have anywhere near the depth and the talent that these other top teams in the East do. Until they get that, it's going to be really difficult for them to hang in these sort of games.
Right, and there's no doubt Michigan's playing just really great football right now. I think I know where you're going to lean on this one, but final predictions for the game on Saturday?
You know, I picked, like, Michigan to win 42-0. I know that, you know, the 78-0 thing from 2 years ago has kind of scarred people, and it's always a concern. But the only way I think it gets that crazy is if, you know, Michigan has a couple of defensive touchdowns, which could happen. The way I figure out is, you know, Michigan, this is all gearing up for the Ohio State game and the national title. So my guess is that Michigan gets in, gets its big lead the end of the first half, early, you know, second half, and then kind of puts the second and third string guys in there and kind of coasts from there. I mean, I think the score is going to be lopsided, but I think how lopsided it is depends on can Rutgers hold up against those Michigan second and third string players. They didn't 2 years ago, but you have to think that their roster's a little bit better now to kind of not let things get out of hand like that.
Yeah, I think so too. I was very excited. I was one of the folks that was excited when Rutgers joined the Big Ten. I remember being back in college when they were in the Big East, the days of Ray Rice and Brian Leonard, and used to love watching those, you know, Thursday or Friday night games when they beat a team like West Virginia or Louisville and storm the field. Do you think joining the Big Ten was a bad idea, or is it still kind of one of those work in progresses with it's still kind of early? Get some recruits in and maybe be able to compete here down the road?
No, I think that joining the Big Ten was the best thing that ever happened to Rutgers, just because I think you look at the alternatives. You know, alternative number one is, I guess they're still in the American, you know, and they could be UConn. I mean, UConn was in the Fiesta Bowl, and now, you know, a decade later, people are talking about killing the program. You know, I think that there are some Rutgers fans that, you know, that, like, there's like the fringe that wish that they could go back to playing Lehigh and Princeton. You know, I think like that ship has clearly sailed. You know, being in the Patriot League, or the, you know, some fans say, well, we should be in the MAC. I mean, that's obviously not going to happen. I think that some fans make the argument, well, maybe Rutgers should have waited and tried to get an invitation from the ACC. But the way I've always looked at it is that I think the ACC, while the Big Ten is very tough for the football program right now, You look at the wrestling program. You look at the women's soccer program, the field hockey program, the men's lacrosse program. They're growing in prominence in the Big Ten. You know, the men's lacrosse, women's soccer, field hockey, like one of those three programs is kind of getting close to the point where they might be able to win the school's first Big Ten championship. I think, you know, baseball and softball would eventually will compete in the Big Ten. I think if you, you know, men's basketball even, you know, it's, sure. there's a vision there. And I think that you make the ACC argument, yeah, maybe the ACC would have been better fit for the football program, but all the other programs I think would have struggled mightily when it's the hoops programs in the ACC or even those programs like baseball, softball that are now competing against Southern schools that are recruiting Florida and the Carolinas and Georgia. So I think overall the Big Ten, and not to mention all the academic side and the research stuff. So I think there's some fans who kind of, when there's a bad loss or there's an embarrassing loss or they realize, you know, we're never going to beat Michigan, why are we in the Big Ten? But I think overall, I mean, it's the best, it's the Big Ten. You know, I don't think you can really say no to the Big Ten when they invite you.
Looking at football and obviously the college football playoff, you know, the new rankings are out. I know you you follow not just Rutgers, but college football in general. Bama, number one. I mean, is there any team out there right now that you think can compete with them?
I would say Clemson and Michigan, you know, honestly. I think that for Michigan, I think the Michigan will probably be better off being – and I think what's going to be big, in my opinion, is how does the committee, if Notre Dame goes undefeated – if Michigan wins out and wins the Big Ten, how do they handle, you know, seeding those two teams? Because I think if Michigan is the 4 seed playing Alabama, I think it's going to be tough. But if you're Michigan and you're the 3 seed and you maybe upset Clemson, if Clemson-Michigan is a 2-3 game, whoever wins that game, as long as they're healthy, they're going to get a 1-week turnaround to play Alabama. And I think that might give – help out the underdog in the sense that, you know, Nick Saban doesn't have a whole month to pick you apart. He's got a week. You know, obviously there'd be pre-scouting and everything. So I do think those teams can compete. I just think Clemson's defensive line can stack up. And, you know, here's the thing about Alabama. It's very, very hard to go undefeated through the SEC and then win two playoff games. So, you know, they might slip up somewhere. I mean, I don't even think it's out of the question. I think it would be very difficult for Georgia to beat them in the SEC title game just because Georgia's kind of soft in the middle and that's where Alabama kills you. But it wouldn't shock me either if they got tripped up in the title game or even an Auburn team that has talent and really, you know, that's their big game this year. But I do think Michigan could potentially push Alabama depending on the circumstances. But I also think Michigan's got to get past Ohio State first, and I think that they really can't overlook that game, especially with being in the horseshoe.
Well, they're billing it as the revenge tour this year, and certainly they want some revenge against Ohio State. So a lot of Michigan fans hoping that the team obviously doesn't overlook them as well. But as you've seen, Ohio State's just – they have not been playing good football, but they certainly have a few weeks to make that work. There's some big games in the Big Ten still left to go, but one game I think is getting a little overlooked as you talk about Ohio State is the game against Michigan State this weekend. Do you think that's one maybe that Sparty can pull the upset, or do you think Ohio State – State's finally going to figure out what's ailed them the last few weeks and get it done?
Yeah, it's weird. Coming into the season, I was kind of, you know, off the pace. I had predicted a Michigan State-Iowa Big Ten championship game. Obviously, the Spartans are going to get there, but it wouldn't shock me if Michigan State wins that game. I think Michigan State is kind of a hot and cold team. I'm intrigued to see what happens with Rutgers at the end of the season, just because if you look at these final three games, you would say the most winnable game for Rutgers is Michigan State. And we've kind of seen a team look very impressive at times and not so impressive so much. But, you know, I also think that's a game that Ohio State has to win. So, you know, I think it's kind of push comes to shove game. But, no, I definitely could see Michigan State, you know, giving them a run there.
Yeah, I think so, too. He's James Cratch. You can follow him on Twitter, at James Cratch. He covers Rutgers football for New Jersey Advanced Media. Check out his work at NJ.com. James, appreciate the time today. Thanks for popping on.
Anytime. Thank you.
All right. Now time for some picks. A rough one last week, 1-3. Missed out on my lock of the week. Florida got their butts handed to them by Missouri. That was super disappointing. Did not see that one coming. The Gators can now join the likes of Tulsa and NC State as my three losses of the week that didn't hit, which means I will never, ever, 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 ever count on them again. Now, here's the good news. Lock of the week still pulling in a significant profit on the season if you've been picking these picks throughout the year. 7-3 over 10 weeks, which is pretty darn good. We'll look to make it 8-3, hopefully, this week. Couple games I'm looking at. I'm going to start in Bedlam. I mentioned this game earlier on the podcast, a rivalry game with Oklahoma State on the road at Oklahoma. Oklahoma, a 20-point favorite in this one. Oklahoma's defense, not good. Offense, of course, has been fantastic. Oklahoma State, they've been inconsistent this year. So I think maybe that's why the point spread's at the point that it's at. But they shouldn't have trouble scoring points in this one. And when you've got a game with two pretty explosive offenses and a game that you've got a rivalry, a 20-point spread just seems a bit too high here. So I'm going to take the underdog. I think that's a lot of points. I'll go with Oklahoma State plus 20. Heading to my favorite conference, the Big Ten, and no, probably not a game you were thinking I would pick based on all the games in the Big Ten this weekend. You're probably thinking, why am I going to pick this one? But we're going to head to Indiana. Maryland faces the Hoosiers. Indiana's a 1-point favorite in this game. I think Maryland's just a broken team right now. They looked terrible against Sparty last week, which was understandable given everything that happened on campus that week. They've lost 6 Big Ten road games in a row. They're just not playing good football. And you can make the argument, okay, Indiana's coming off a couple losses in a row. They've got the bye week, though. They had several injured players that are going to come back after getting some rest. They've got that home cooking. And in a game that's essentially a pick 'em, I'm all over the home team on this one. Give me Indiana in this game at home against Maryland. Going to stay in Indiana for my next pick, Notre Dame. They host Florida State in South Bend. This game is only awesome based on the names of the teams that are playing. When you actually dig in and look at this game and probably watch this game on Saturday, it's going to be awful. I mean, just awful for Florida State. They're terrible at football right now. And Notre Dame has been so solid at quarterback with Ian Book. He's going to give Florida State's defense trouble all day. The O-line for Florida State has been playing horribly. Notre Dame's defense should have no issues here. I know 17.5 points is a big number, don't get me wrong. And Notre Dame has had issues at times this year, particularly early in the season before they made the move to Book, covering on some spreads. But really, don't get all hyped up in this game. Don't get caught up in the fact that by name, Florida State sounds like a team that's going to compete. They are just terrible, and Notre Dame is going to expose them in this game. They are going to cruise in this game. I am not afraid of the number, and I'll take Notre Dame 17.5 point favorites. And my lock of the week, I'm going with a team that plays great at home. They're looking to stay undefeated on their home turf, and that is the Houston Cougars. They are a 4.5 point favorite at home against Temple. There are some really good numbers here that help the Houston cause from a betting perspective. They're 5-1 against the spread in their last 6 games at home. They're 5-2 against the number in their last 7 home games. They're 5-0 against the spread in their last 5 games following an against the spread loss, and they're 5-2 in their last 7 games as a 3-point favorite or better. I know Temple has been playing some decent football lately, but Houston has so much offensive firepower. I think they're going to give Temple all the trouble they can expect here. Expanding on the fact that they're playing at home, I like Houston. That's my lock of the week. 4.5 points. Take it to the bank. And now for the game that matters most this weekend, 4th-ranked Michigan, 8-1 on the year, taking on 1-8 Rutgers, a road game in Piscataway. Michigan, a 40-point favorite in this one. You know, really the biggest factor in this game, to be honest, is focus. I mean, you don't want to underestimate Rutgers. They've been terrible this year. But you can't just go into the game expecting to cruise, at least not going into the game with that mentality. What's really made Michigan so good this year, and particularly the last few weeks, has been how motivated they've been. You call it the revenge tour. They've been playing at a high level. They've been angry. They've wanted to win badly. So you really don't want to see a letdown spot here in this game. And it's not like they're necessarily looking ahead here in any way. Obviously, they're a few weeks away from the big game against Ohio State. But, you know, really, again, it comes down to the focus. And I think this team has exemplified now their ability to remain focused and be motivated. And I know the coaching staff has been working with them all week. Who knows necessarily what that revenge tour motivation would be in this game? You know, maybe the fact that Last year, this game was kind of still in doubt early in the third quarter before Michigan was able to pull away. Maybe the coaching staff utilizes that with the players this week to get them a little extra motivated for this game. But really, when you look at this game on paper, statistically, Michigan literally dominates in every category on each side of the ball. The kick coverage, which we talked about with James Cratch from NJ.com earlier, and Coach Harbaugh talked about it in the presser earlier this week. You know, sure, their kick coverage is pretty good, but Michigan really dominates every facet of this game statistically. So it, again, just comes down to the preparation, the mental preparation, and coming into this game with the expectation, not that they're just going to be able to come in and roll Rutgers, but actually have some motivation to come out here and make it happen on the football field. Ultimately, I expect Michigan to be motivated. I expect them to come out in this game focused. I think they will cruise. I expect Michigan to run the ball a lot. Look for them to use the run-pass option with Shea Patterson, the play action to take some shots down the field on offense. I think Caron Higdon will have another consecutive 100-yard game. I think Chris Evans has a legit shot of getting 100 yards, maybe not all rushing, you know, maybe some plays on some screens where he's able to get out in the open field and make some guys miss. Defensively, I think that's big trouble for Rutgers. I think if you ask Clubber Lang for a prediction for the fight, he'd say pain. Rutgers freshman quarterback has not seen anything like this scheme that Michigan runs defensively. And I think the defense is going to be the team, or the side of the ball, I should say, that's extra motivated in this game. They shut out Rutgers in Piscataway a few years ago. They're going to be hungry and ready to swallow up that Rutgers offense this week. They've let some points on the field late in games when the games have been out of reach, where Michigan's really dominated. They've let some teams go down and score late, mostly with the second teamers in the game. And I think that's going to be that motivation that will push Michigan to the next level here. And I do think they will find a way to shut out Rutgers here. I really do. I think they'll have that extra motivation. So in the end, I'll go with Michigan 41, Rutgers nothing. And we'll see if Michigan can pull out the shutout here on Saturday. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Hail to the Pod. Thank you so much for tuning in. Big thank you to my guest, James Cratch from NJ.com. Remember, you can always tweet me at krich23, email the show at hailtothepod@gmail.com, and be sure to rate and review the podcast on your favorite podcast platform. I appreciate those ratings and those reviews as much as possible. Those are awesome. Enjoy the games this week, and as always, go Blue.